From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, opposition grows over the governor's top end of session priority. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on two new co-chairs of the state Democratic Party. And we'll take you to Buffalo, where a first-term state legislator crafts a bill to stop industrial development agencies. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. There's growing opposition in the legislature to Governor Cuomo's top end of session priority, enacting a new agency to curb abuse of the mentally and physically disabled at state-run centers. Opponents, though, say the new proposed entity does not go far enough. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
When Governor Cuomo introduced what he calls the Justice Center for Protection of People with Special Needs, he said it would establish the strongest standards and practices in the nation. The new agency would employ a staff special prosecutor and inspector general. They'd pursue allegations of abuse of the mentally and physically disabled in the care of the state and increase penalties for those convicted. It would also set up a 24-hour hotline to report suspected abuse and create a statewide database of workers convicted of abuses to prevent them from ever being hired again. Cuomo said at the time that the legislation will be his number one priority for the end of the legislative session.
This is the most important, and this is the most critical. This is 1 million people.
The reforms come after a New York Times series that found widespread abuse at group homes and other state-run facilities with offenders rarely disciplined. Cuomo's plan was quickly approved by the Republican-led state Senate, but Democrats in the Assembly are expressing some reservations. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver says he's concerned that the investigative process would not be independent enough.
We have concerns about, obviously, it being a totally internal process. And that there is no outside review.
Silver says those who complain about abuses they might witness while working at a state facility would have to report them to someone who also works for the Cuomo administration.
I think there has to be some way in which somebody can be heard other than an employee of the state of New York.
Silver spoke just before addressing an Assembly-sponsored forum on disabled rights issues. The Assembly planned to pass a package of bills, but Cuomo's Justice Center proposal was not among them. The speaker says he's talking about his concerns with the governor. He expects some kind of compromise will eventually be reached. Disabled rights advocate Michael Carey was also at the event. Carey's autistic 13-year-old son Jonathan was killed while in the care of a state center for the developmentally disabled. His caregiver was convicted of manslaughter for suffocating the boy in the backseat of a van while another colleague watched and did nothing. Carey, who has advocated for systematic reform to prevent abuse of disabled children, is highly critical of Cuomo's proposal. He calls it the fox guarding the hen house.
I believe this is going to be stopped in its current format. This is not an independent agency, and it is not about protecting the disabled. It is the exact opposite. It's about protecting the state against lawsuits and all these hundreds of provider agencies, and it's about keeping the police out of the loop by not notifying 911 and independent law enforcement. And that's how they've been craftily able to cover up abuse for decades in New York State.
Carey says he told top Cuomo administration officials about his concerns, but his views were not heeded.
I gave advice and almost all of it was blown off.
Assembly Republican Minority Leader Brian Kolb, who also attended the Assembly Forum, says he too has some concerns about Cuomo's bill.
Obviously, the mission should be to help those that are disabled and make sure that they're not being abused, and making sure that those are abusing, that we move swiftly and quickly to remedy that. But also, there can't be any false protections just because you work in state government. So the intent of the governor's bill is the right intent, but now we got to look at the devil in the details.
In a statement, Cuomo's Deputy Secretary of Health, James Introne, says the new agency will be independent and accountable. He says they've already begun the process to create an independent not-for-profit watchdog to monitor the system. And he says the legislation calls for incident review committees for every provider of care to the disabled. Those committees would include representatives of families, consumers, and advocates. And he says they'd be empowered to review the adequacy of investigations and propose changes to prevent similar incidents in the future. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week we saw the exiting of the head of the Democratic Party in New York State, Jay Jacobs. He's out. The governor has brought in Stephanie Miner, the mayor of Syracuse, and Assemblyman Keith Wright of Manhattan to co-chair the party. This is pretty regular course for governors, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, David, I really don't know what these people really do. I mean, they have their executives in there who are running the day-to-day party stuff. So the chair becomes largely symbolic. Sure, you can deliver a little patronage and do all of that. But symbol-wise, you see that Keith Wright, of course, is a man of color, a very articulate and seemingly nice fellow. Same thing in terms of a woman who is mayor of Syracuse. And so you have the right kinds of New Yorkers who will help Cuomo. Now, interestingly, I mean, I've interviewed Jay Jacobs a number of times. I think he was very articulate and very smart. And, of course, he was ready to fall on the knife because that's what you do. That's how he got the job. That's how the next guy gets the job. I think we make a lot out of it, but I don't think, frankly, there's much there.
Well, we've been talking regularly on this program since the idea of gas drilling became real in New York State, Alan. And in fact, WAMC did a whole week of coverage on the issue. And just in over the weekend, I picked up this report. It's out of Denver, Colorado, but it's instructive for New York. And here's what it says. The Environmental Protection Agency is checking for pollution after a tanker truck carrying thousands of gallons of fracking chemicals rolled over near Loma, spilling chemicals into a nearby creek.
Well, David, just by bringing this up, you prove yourself once again to be brilliant. The truth is, you have a governor of New York who says, we don't want to do it unless it's safe. We have a president who says, we don't want to do it unless it's safe. But, you know, trucks fall over, turn over all the time. You hear about them on the thruway. You hear about them, on secondary roads. The idea that this isn't going to happen and that this can be done safely, you know, both with nuclear and the spent rods and with the water for the fracking, you see what the dangers are. They don't know what to do with these things. They don't know what to do with the nuclear rods. They don't know what to do with the spent water. First, they were going to put them in holding pens. Then they found out that that was pollutant and that the atmosphere was absorbing some of that. So then they said, we can't do that anymore. Now we have to do something else. We're going to have containers. Look, you know, this is the kind of thing that should say, okay, if you want to drill for that gas and you want to make that argument, fine, but you cannot do it until you have it all right. And this proves that if you're going to take stuff away in tanker trucks, it ain't right. English teachers, forgive me.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. While some school districts and unions are reportedly considering suing to overturn a provision in New York State's new tax cap law, cooler heads are urging them to take a wait-and-see attitude for the time being. More from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
In New Paltz, the school budget got 59.3% of the vote, but it failed. The reason? The tax cap requires a 60% supermajority of votes to override a school district's tax levy limit. Judging by the recent annual school budget elections, the supermajority requirement made an impact. Tim Creamer is the executive director of the New York State School Boards Association.
There was a 96% passage rate for school budget votes statewide, and if you stayed at or below your tax levy limit, you're almost guaranteed to pass it. 99%, in fact, did. There were 24 school budget votes or school tax levies, depending on how you want to look at it, that did not pass. 19 of those sought to pierce their cap, sought to go beyond their allowable tax levy limit, the 2% cap, and therefore would need a supermajority. There's a lot of frustration out there among those school districts that had met their simple majority level but didn't have the supermajority, and they're upset about this.
Superintendents in districts who have seen their budgets defeated must now go back to square one. New York State United Teachers spokesman Carl Korn weighs in.
Teachers care about students and they care about the education program. What they see with the tax cap is that while it might be successful at holding down taxes, the other part of the equation is the question, at what cost? While 96% of the state's budgets passed this year, the price was extremely high. Schools are closing, AP courses are being cut, class sizes are being increased. We've seen districts eliminate full-day kindergarten, and of course an additional 4,000 teachers and education staff are being laid off just to meet the demands of the tax cap.
Some officials have suggested the situation may require a legal remedy to resolve. Korn says NYSED is analyzing the results of the recent budget voting, and the one fact that jumps out is the 60% supermajority requirement.
In any election, a candidate with 59% would say, hey, that's a landslide victory. 59% when you're trying to override the cap is actually a defeat. We don't believe that 40% of the community should be able to dictate to the majority how much is spent educating a community's children. And we're going to look closely at the results and at the law and seek an appropriate remedy. Whether that remedy is legislative or whether that remedy might be found in the courts is still a question that we are looking at.
Tim Creamer concedes there is great concern over the issue of minority rule.
Let's let these other districts that have lost their budget votes, the 24, decide what they want to do. There's the opportunity to bring this forward for a second budget vote. My advice to them is take advantage of that opportunity. Otherwise, you go straight to 0% tax increase. So my expectation is that all 24 of them will put it up for a second vote.
Creamer's message to the districts, wait until after June 19th before going off in a new direction.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
In recent years, donut shops, car dealerships, and doctor's offices have received tax breaks from industrial development agencies in western New York. Now, a first-term state legislator from Buffalo has crafted a bill to halt such deals. He joins a growing chorus of critics who argue IDAs have lost their way since being created in the 1960s to generate high-paying manufacturing jobs. But as the Innovation Trail's Daniel Robison reports, the bill is far from being put to a vote.
Last fall, in the first press conference of his legislative career, Assemblyman Sean Ryan planted a podium on a sidewalk next to a busy road in Tonawanda. Behind him stood a large liquor store known as Premier.
There's nothing wrong with Premier. I shop at Premier. It's a good store. But as you can see, it's 10 o'clock in the morning and we have a full parking lot here. So it's a thriving business.
But as of May 1st, Premier packed its bags and moved to a shopping center a few miles away in Amherst. That town's industrial development agency catalyzed this move with $500,000 in tax breaks. Ryan says the IDA effectively poached the business and its annual tax revenue from Tonawanda. He says town IDAs are increasingly rubber stamping almost all tax breaks because they need fees to survive.
So you've got this perverse incentive to subsidize something every year in order to keep the lights on and keep the salaries paid in your IDAs.
While all of New York City has one IDA, Erie County, which is much smaller, has six. This creates an environment where almost any business can shop around and find the biggest tax break, Ryan says. So he has written legislation to strip the county's five town IDAs of the power to grant most tax breaks. That would leave just one, the county IDA, with full powers.
And it's hard to pull a, shall we say, stinky deal through that body, because someone will flag it as is not good economic development.
Ryan's aims can only be accomplished in Albany because IDAs derive power from state law. While he's been prepping the bill for months, it still hasn't been introduced. For why, look no further than the five town IDAs that would be hamstrung by the legislation.
I think this is completely unnecessary.
Hamburg supervisor Stephen Walters says tax breaks from IDAs have resulted in dozens of businesses moving into vacant buildings in his town. He says critics shouldn't disparage the new jobs that come as a result.
They try to simply look at the business itself and say that type of business should not be incented.
Walter says his town's tax base has improved because of tax breaks. Hamburg IDA Chairman Michael Bartlett agrees, even if the jobs created are in restaurants and retail outlets.
These jobs, yeah, they may not be paying $20 or $30 an hour, but these jobs are important to them. I bet you some of these people are able to pay their rent, send their kids to school, and put food on their table because of these jobs.
Loud opposition to Ryan's bill by town IDAs have spooked would-be Senate sponsors, says Andrew Rudnick. He's CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, an organization like the Chamber of Commerce. Without a sponsor, the bill goes nowhere. Rudnick says town IDAs are fighting for their lives. Without the ability to grant most tax breaks, town IDAs will likely go out of business. He says that might be the point.
Do I think somewhere that's in the minds of the people who crafted that, that over time you would end up with one IDA by attrition as opposed by legislation? Oh, I'm pretty sure that's part of the thinking.
But the clock is ticking. With the legislative session over in June, Ryan only has a few weeks to secure a co-sponsor, find votes, and push the bill through Albany. Rudnick says it still has a chance, but he wouldn't bet on it.
That was the Innovation Trail's Daniel Robison reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new ruling by a state Supreme Court judge could force five counties in the North Country and the Hudson Valley to pay millions of dollars a year to help fund dam operations in the southern Adirondacks. We get more on that from North Country Public Radio's Brian Mann.
This is one of those stories that requires a little history. Decades ago, flooding was a regular event along the upper Hudson River. Cities like Albany and Glens Falls and Rensselaer flooded all the time. Then big dams were built in the southern Adirondacks, especially the big Conklingville Dam that created Great Sacandaga Reservoir in 1930. That helped. And for decades, the dam's operations were paid for by fees charged to hydro dam operators, big power companies that benefited from the regular flow of water. But Mike Clark, who heads the Hudson River Black River Regulating District, says that source of revenue was pinched off abruptly 3 years ago when the power companies won a big lawsuit.
It has been a struggle. We have not, we've had difficult times paying the school and property taxes. 2 years ago in May, in the Hudson River area, particularly the field staff on the Sacandaga, there was a significant layoff. We lost most of our staff here. We are still accomplishing our mission, but it takes more work.
The regulating district is a state-run authority. It first asked the legislature for help in the form of direct funding, but lawmakers in Albany balked at the idea. The regulating district then sent a bill to downstream counties demanding that they pay roughly $4.5 million a year for flood protection. Again, Mike Clark.
Five downstream counties, Albany, Saratoga, Rensselaer, Washington, and Warren, are indeed beneficiaries of flood protection from Great Sacandaga Lake and are obligated to pay certain assessed costs.
But at a time when county budgets are already strained, county leaders hated the idea of paying for flood protection that they've always received for free. Dan Steck is head of the Warren County Board of Supervisors.
In Warren County, on an annual basis, it's approximately $300,000. And to put that in perspective, you know, that's almost 1% of our tax levy. So there's half the tax cap, you know, that we're allowed to work with right there, in addition to all the escalating unfunded mandates. So it's a significant impact to our county budget.
So this question's been fought over in court since 2010. Can the regulating district charge people downstream for flood protection? And if so, how should they go about it? Spencer Helwig, administrator in Saratoga County, says if the regulating district wants to charge for those services, all downstream property owners should pay, not just counties.
There's literally thousands of beneficiaries, and the regulating authority really need to do their due diligence and contact each individual property owner and levy their portion of the total.
But in this latest decision, handed down May 10th, the Appellate Division of the State Supreme Court rejected that argument. The court found that it would be too complex and burdensome for the regulating district to identify all the property owners who might benefit from flood protection over thousands of square miles. The ruling found that the regulating district's approach, charging counties for flood services, is, quote, neither irrational nor unreasonable. It's still unclear whether counties will appeal, but they did win one victory in this ruling. The court confirmed that before charging local governments for flood protection, the regulating district first has to deduct any value that the state of New York receives from the dams and their operations. Again, the regulating district's Mike Clark.
The only item that the court directed the regulating district to correct is the New York State's share of costs to be deducted prior to the counties being assessed. Myself and my staff are working on that presently.
If this ruling stands, there is one other bit of positive budget news for at least some local taxpayers. The regulating district is required by state law to pay property taxes in several counties to school districts. But because of its budget woes, the authority has fallen millions of dollars into debt. When new revenue begins to come in, Clark says, those back taxes will finally be paid off.
Job one is going to be to pay those, the past due school and property taxes. That would happen just as soon as we have money in our accounts.
During last year's spring floods, there were concerns raised about safety at Conklingville Dam on the Great Sacandaga Reservoir. But despite the regulating district's budget woes and staff cuts, Clark says inspections and maintenance have continued without interruption. Brian Mann, North Country Public Radio.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1221. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.